Thank you, Oli, and thank you, Tim, for giving my talk for me. If any of you are tired of seeing water content data, I'd suggest leaving now quickly. And really, this fits in quite well with this session. A couple of years ago, one of my graduate students came and gave some correlative information on this study that we're doing here. And as I was going through that data, I saw a lot of interesting things going on. And what I want to do today is really present some of that, some of the questions that were asked and a few of the answers we got. And maybe you'll have a few questions yourself. So I want to thank the other people who have been working on this project. There's a whole lot of data to go through. I don't think I have to say much about this. We know that the distribution of water depends on many factors. They've already been said here this afternoon. And really in a dryland cropping system, as Tim was talking about, the control and knowledge of moisture is really critical to grow crops. So the research goals of this overall project, not specifically what I'm going to talk about, but in general, were to evaluate the relationship between soil moisture dynamics and morphological features, because in the landscape we're going to be talking about, there's a lot of differences. Also, just like Tim was talking about, we really want to understand the fate of the water in the landscape to learn how the crops are using that water and to try to correlate these continuous monitoring measurements that we have to things that can't be done continuously, maybe like EM measurements across the field. Some tools that we could actually give farmers in the end to help them know more about their moisture that I don't anticipate going and throwing down all these sites across just a random field. So the Cook Agronomy Farm is a 37-hectare field. There are basically three rotations. I've got a picture of it back here. Sorry about the text not showing up very well. They basically switch between three parts of this field all the year. One is a legume-type rotation, typically a wheat, and sometimes a winter-spring wheat, and sometimes a barley thrown in there. The soil is what we are pretty interested in. It's a Palouse silt loam, generally, although it varies across the field. And we had about 500 millimeters of rain annually, usually coming in the winter and spring, so that's pretty easy to deal with in terms of looking at how the crops are using water. This is under a continuous rotation. We didn't have any fallow there, although they did make a mistake the first year, and we got some interesting fallow information, but I won't be sharing it here today. And it's basically rolling hills, similar to most of the Palouse. We've got about a 40 meter elevation change here on this farm. The site setup I'll just briefly describe, similar to kind of things that Tim was talking about. We had 12 sites at this time from the data I'm showing here. We've since expanded to 42 sites this year. We're measuring at 5 depths at 30 centimeter increments. We're measuring volumetric water content, electrical conductivity, and temperature. The installation, there are a lot of different ways we can install. We kind of put a hybrid together based on what we need to do in the field conditions. We basically dug a trench, installed the first sensor into the sidewall of that trench. Then at the base of that trench, which is a little more than 30 centimeters deep, we bored 5-centimeter auger holes down to 60 through 150 centimeters, and then installed the probe at the bottom of each one of those bore holes, and tried to repack the soil as well as we could. Our anticipation is using this site for many years, and so we expect the soil to come back to some natural state. A little bit about the farm. I don't want to go into this in too much detail, but you can see the contours basically. We're going to look at three specific sites here, although I mentioned there were 12, and those are indicated by the stars. We're going to talk about sites 1 through 3. Site 1 was really on a hilltop area. Site 2 was down at a drainage area. You can see it's draining here. Our expectation it was, although there was no visible surface flow ever in that area. And then we're going to talk about site 3, which is on a toe slope, basically on the north side of the farm. So let's jump in. Like I said, I'm going to present some water content data. That shouldn't be any surprise. Some of the things that we learned from this were interesting to me. When we installed these sensors back in the end of April in 07, we found the 30-centimeter water content was already changing quite quickly. The plant water use was fairly heavy there. Most of this is fairly, is to be expected. We have water use starting at 30 centimeters, and then we pick it up at the 60 and so on down through the profile. What was most interesting was this 120 centimeter sensor. And initially we said, my goodness, why are those data so high? We're having a 50% volumetric water content. We're sitting in a silt loam, which is certainly near saturation. Why are we seeing such high data here? What we found in this profile was that there was a hard pan between 120 and 150 centimeters. And what we anticipate is going on is the water is making it down to that 120 centimeters and actually ponding there. And interestingly, the roots appear to be going down. We see it, water use here at 90 centimeters, but not all that great compared to the upper sensors. And now down here at 120 centimeters, we start quite wet and actually end up the driest across the season. And we anticipate that the roots are going down to that 120 centimeter level, hitting the hard pan, not really making it through very well, and using that water that's available there through the end of the season. And it's important to note that basically harvest happens right about there on the Palouse, sometime at the end of July. So considering what might be happening in the wet up during the winter infiltration, this is important to know. One of the things we're looking for is, are these sensors reading correctly? Are we getting information that we'd expect to see? Especially looking specifically at the 120 centimeter level, whenever you work on an active farm, you either bury your stuff like Tim did well below the plow layer, or like our poor technician has to do, run out of the field regularly, bury it all, put a little marker there and let them plow over the top and seed over the top of them. So we don't have the some of the wet up data. You can see the rainstorms coming here. The 120 centimeter level wets up, and again it returns to that 50% level. Let's talk about the second site. I mentioned it was a lowland site. Basically, it was at the bottom of some possible drainage areas, although there wasn't any surface flow that we saw. The plants throughout this time period that I'm showing here were vigorous and healthy. And so one question we got to when we were looking at these data was, first, wow, this is very wet down here. And two, why didn't this nice triticale use any of the water that was there and why, or apparently use? We see the 30 centimeter sensor quickly drops. That was just what we saw at the other sites. After a rain event here in kind of mid-June, late June time, it stays the same, basically. And at the other depths we look at, we actually see some trending information upward. And Tim already actually talked about this, that although we don't see that on the surface, there's subsurface lateral flow going on. At least we expect so. We'd like to put some sensors down there to actually measure that and find out what's going on there. But basically at this lowland site, it had adequate soil moisture through the entire summer period, which is fairly rare on the Palouse, and actually opened up some opportunities to grow some different kind of crops down there where you just couldn't do that at other parts on this particular farm. Now, one of the other things that we noticed was this, and I can say that a lot of people have asked me about this over the years, have grabbed a graph like this and said, hey, look, we have hydraulic redistribution. And I immediately reply to them, ha, it's not hydraulic redistribution. What we're seeing here is temperature influence on your sensor measurements. And I would probably agree with you that we may be seeing this here at 30 centimeters. But I think we'd have to all agree that at 150 centimeters, we don't see much diurnal change in temperature. And so we started looking at this a little more closely, because what we see here is you notice the water content is just flat here. We don't see any of that going into this. And at a certain point when the plants begin to use this water, suddenly we see this diurnal phase superimposed in that water content data. So I went ahead and said, okay, well, what's really going on here? Let's blow up just this little chunk of data here and look at it more specifically. And here I just put in lines for the midnight each day so we can kind of get calibrated for what we're looking at. And you see that peak of the water content happens, you know, about between 5 and 7 a.m. each day, maybe a little bit earlier, basically suggesting that you know, we are inverted to the temperature phase anyway. And we can have an argument over whether or not that might be true. But the 120 centimeter sensor is interesting here because it doesn't get any of that cycling. And my take on this is what we're seeing here is some hydraulic redistribution down at this level. Probably some roots have grown very close to the sensors there. We're catching the change in water content in the roots. Probably not grown so closely to the sensor there at 120. Now, here's some temperature data just to show that it's not changing there and convince you of this fact, that we do see it there at 30 centimeters, but basically we only see the yearly trend at those sensors that are deeper. Now, one of the things that we often run into, and Naftali actually asked a question about this to Tim, is, well, wait a second, here's water content data. You know, what's the point? We're really interested in water potential. So what's going on? Well, often water potential does provide more information than water content, because we can determine plant available water. We can start comparing sites and saying, well, how does this site compare to this other site? But, you know, here I'm using a preference toward using water content to infer water potential. The basic reason is we can throw a lot of sensors measuring water content out because they require less maintenance. They're simple, much easier to calibrate, basically. And even most water potential sensors don't show much change near saturation unless we're using something like a tensiometer. So we decided to create a soil moisture release curve for one of our sites. We'd like to do it for more, just take some time. We just used a chilled mirror method for the dry range and a tensiometer for the wet range to do that. And I'm not focusing on that, just to give you an idea of what we did there. Created a moisture release curve there for the soil at this specific site. Then we replotted site 3 at this toe slope according to the water potential. Now, what we were trying to figure out is, why did the plant start using water at the 60 centimeter level when there was still, according to the volumetric water content, some water there available, and quite a bit of water, in fact. And what we found was kind of interesting from the water potential data, that in fact, every time the water potential at let's say 30 centimeters specifically, well, it started to reach this less than optimum level of maybe one bar or a little less, we start to see the change in the sensor at 60 centimeters. Now, we haven't completely integrated this through the whole profile, so these are just inferences, not hard and fast rules. But what I'm getting from these data is that as the plant sees the optimal water level, water potential level at each of these at a given depth decrease below what it wants, it begins to find water at lower and lower depths. Now, just some conclusions. Water use by depth, we already know, depends on both morphology and some of the hydrology of the level at a more macro scale. We can also see that the roots do find water deeper in the soil. We knew that, but they are limited by hard pans. And that's something that I hadn't seen so much. Intuitively, it makes a lot of sense. But really, when they got down to that hard pan, they used all the water above it and not much below it. We identified, quite possibly, some water redistribution at some sites. That wasn't a consistent theme, but a couple of sites showed that. And that converting water potential data gave additional insights into the water use by the plants. Got a lot of future work to do, as you might understand, with 42 sites measuring all day, every day. And so I think in the coming years, we're going to see some correlations between some of this work and the core sampling with the spectroradiometer that we're trying to do right now. With that, I'll take questions. Right.
More interesting point, I think, is when we actually put out these sensor networks, most of this time we're still relying on thinking, where should I put them in the landscape, and taking sort of lucky dip as to where they should go. And it would be really nice if we could take some of the geophysics, like EM, and to use that. Spatial properties of the soils to create
Right.
So I think that could be a really nice thing to upscale.
So a couple of great comments. Thank you, David. The first one, the temperature sensor we have there is co-located on the wire itself. So all of that, copper is all tied into there. So I'd expect the temperature sensor actually to pick that up. So it's a good thought there and needs to be looked into. The second comment is actually we did that. We got with our soil morphologist there in the department. We laid down maps of the field with BT Horizon, looking at the hard pan layers. We also looked at the EM data for years, and we combined that all into. And I didn't do this, he did. David Brown was the one who did that, one of the co-authors. And he basically laid out this to do as good a job as we could to statistically vary what we were looking at. And don't ask me about the statistics because I know nothing about that part. But that's we did try to take that approach in this. That's why we're not doing transect, but they look scattered, and they are that way for a reason. And that's exactly where we'd like to go with all these things. And Dave Huggins, who's in the back, has some of that information, and we're working in that direction. Yeah, thank you very much.
Any other questions?
So most of the sensors, if you're talking, these are capacitance-based sensors, and it's probably about 1 to 2 centimeters to outside the sensor. Oh, a great question. We were in a dry land here, and I'll run screaming to my dry land and try not to answer that question. That's the big $1,000 question there. Natalie's smiling back there. Maybe he wants to answer. I would say, you know, typically in those kind of environments, they do try to put them in the onion of the sensor in terms of what they expect for the soil type and the water movement through there. And it does vary by soil type and really by plant you're looking at. So it's kind of an application-specific question. So I think that's the best I can answer that. Well, the resolution of most capacitance type sensors tends to be quite large. We had one that went to Mars that could measure 0.00001 meter cube per meter cube resolution, but that doesn't say anything to the accuracy. So that's a nice possibility. Yeah, you can get good resolution, certainly.
Okay, thank you very much. And our last speaker in this afternoon session of this symposium is Dr. Harry Verreken from the Research Center in Jülich, Germany. And he's going to speak about